And so with that, we are going to switch and open up to the book of James, chapter 2, verses 14 through 16. Actually, 26. So James, chapter 2, verses 14 through 26 is what we will be looking at today. And this, as you might know, is one of the most difficult and misunderstood sections of the Epistle of James. It's been somewhat of a theological battleground. And James often here has been understood as contradicting some of Paul's teachings that we find in Romans and salvation, where it's so clearly stated that justification and salvation is by faith alone. So with that introduction and realizing that it is somewhat of a challenging passage, we're going to read it and we're going to think about it. But are we the ones who are to shy away and shrink away from a challenge? I would say, no, we're not. Why? Because, I mean, think of the man who was put into space. The challenge was that there's obviously no air in space, yet the man wanted to go into the space, and scientists figured out how to bridge the gap of foreseeing, which seemed to be a contradiction, putting somebody in space and somewhere where there is no air. So similar to when we come to challenges in our own understanding of the scriptures, we are to work harder and dig in and to understand what is it, how can we understand these apparent paradoxes, or what seem to be paradoxes at first glance, to put it all together. So we're not going to shy away or shrink away from it. So with that, let's read this section. James chapter 2, 14 through 26 says the following: "What does it profit, my brethren, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him?" A different translation of this verse reads the following. It says, "What good is it, dear brothers and sisters, if you say you have faith, but don't show it by your actions? Can that kind of faith save anyone?" I like that rendition. Let's go on. It says, verse 15, "If a brother or sister is naked and destitute of daily food, and one of you says to them, 'Depart in peace, be warmed and filled,' but you don't give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Thus also, faith by itself, if it does not have works, is dead. But someone will say, 'You have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without works and I will show you my faith by works.' You believe that there is one God. You do well. Even the demons believe and tremble. But do you want to know, foolish man, that faith without works is dead? Was not Abraham, our father, justified by works when he offered Isaac, his son, on the altar? Do you see that faith was working together with his works, and by works faith was made perfect? And the scripture was fulfilled, which says, 'Abraham believed God, and it was accounted to him for righteousness, and he was called the friend of God.' You see, then, that a man is justified by works and not by faith only. Likewise, was not Rahab the harlot also justified by works when she received the messengers and sent them on their way? For as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also." So this passage is what I want to offer to us for consideration today. So as you read it, why is this a challenging passage sometimes? Well, I'm sure that verse 24 jumped out at you, where it says, "You see that a man is justified by works and not by faith." And if you go back to, for example, Romans 3:28, Paul writes, "A man is justified by faith apart from works." So it almost seems like there is a contradiction. That's why I say it is a difficult passage that needs to be addressed. How do we take those two statements and combine them into one? Because if there is a contradiction, then why do we believe the Bible? But really, there is not a contradiction. James and Paul are talking about the two sides of the same coin, where Paul is addressing and describing how salvation works, that it is truly by faith. And then here, remember the context. James is writing to Christians, to the so-called Christians, and he's telling them, check your faith, test your faith, see if your faith is real. And as you know, as you recall a passage that says, you were created for good works. So a fruit of your faith ought to be good works. So really, they're both sides of the same coin. But we will talk about that more next Sunday and look at that apparent anomaly, or we'll look at that apparent incongruency. But today, what I wanted to do is, before we talk about that, and before we really dig down and understand why does James says that in verse 24, I wanted to highlight for us really the main theme of this passage. What is the main theme of these 13 verses that we read? Is it really that one verse, 24, that oftentimes is misunderstood and quoted to us, or is it something else? And I want to suggest to you that it's actually something else that you see in here. So I want for us to really get down and agree, align on the main text and the theme of this passage, that main takeaway. And then with that, having that in mind, next Sunday we'll look at exactly what is meant by verse 4 here. So, as I mentioned, the context is, as we've studied, James is writing to Christians. And we get through all these different tests of the faith that we talked about last time. Favoritism, trials. And here, we get to faith and works. So what is the main theme? If you had to title this sermon, I would title it as a connection of faith and works. What is the connection between faith and works? That is what James is talking about. Maybe a subtitle would be Living Faith Has Works. And I would suggest to you that there's five main things that flow out of this passage. Let's look at them one more time. There's the introduction to the theme that comes out in verse 14. In verse 14, James, now again approaching his Christian brethren and sister, he says, "What good is it, dear brothers, if you say you have faith, but don't show it by your actions? Can that type of faith save anyone?" So it's a rhetorical question. Clearly, in his introduction to the theme, he's saying that if you have faith, he's asking the question, if you have faith and there is no action, can that faith save anyone? Is that faith of any good? The answer that that question demands is really that no. That type of faith is really useless. And that's what he's going to demonstrate in the future verses. So first item I wanted to highlight to us is he's introducing the theme in verse 14 by asking a question that all of us should ask ourselves. What good is it, dear brothers and sisters, if we say we have faith, but don't show it in our actions? If I have that type of a faith, if you have that type of a faith, the obvious answer should be that, well, it doesn't do anybody good. It doesn't do you any good. It doesn't do the people around you any good that are in communion with you, that have relationships with you, because it doesn't demonstrate to them the saving faith that we proclaim to have. So that's the first part. The second, James gives an illustration of this, you can call him an unsaved Christian, in verses 15 through 16. Look at what he says. He gives an illustration where he says, imagine that there is someone who comes into your assembly who needs something, and someone who's in destitute or naked, perhaps in need of clothes. And you, in that example, talk to them rather nicely. You tell them, be warm and be filled, but you do absolutely nothing about them and you send them on their way. So he's giving an illustration in those verses 15 and 16, and an illustration of empty concern for others. Empty concern for others. And look how verse 16 ends. He says, if you do not give them the things which are needed for the body, what does it profit? Again, he asks a rhetorical question. If somebody comes to you and says, look, I need help, please help me, and you bless them, but you do absolutely nothing, the point that he's making is that it doesn't profit them at all. It doesn't help them at all. So think of perhaps an example that you might have in your own life. An example that I was thinking as I was preparing for this was the myriad of homeless people that we see on the streets. And now we know that majority of them are probably have psychic issues. That being said, there are some people in true destitute. So as I was thinking about this and reflecting, I could think of a number of events where a homeless person was asking me for something, perhaps for money or for food. And in some instances, I gave him something. But in other instances, the majority of the time, I probably thought, geez, you're young and able-bodied, you need to go and work. That being said, there was a thought in my heart that, well, perhaps this person is really truly needed. I'm making a decision. I think he's able, but I'm sending him off because I think he's probably okay. He's just lazy. That being said, there was a thought in my heart thinking, well, maybe he really does need help and I'm not doing anything about it. And if you think about it, perhaps you too were in that similar situation where you didn't help perhaps a person or a homeless person. You rationalized in your mind that, okay, you're doing it for the right reason, yet there was a doubt in your mind that maybe that person really did need help and you sent them off. So in that example, if that happened to you as it happened to me, regardless what the reason was, we clearly did not help the person. So we were of no profit to that person. There was no help exhibited to the person in need, assuming that that person actually was in need. And so James, in verse 17, after he gives that illustration of this empty concern for others, again, he goes back to the theme and he says, well, your faith, thus also faith by itself, if there is no works associated with it, in my example, if there is no help that was attributed or exhibited towards the homeless person, it's dead because it doesn't show. It's of no good. It didn't help that person at all. So in summary, that second item or the second item that flows out from this text to us is the illustration of this empty concern for others that James likens to the dead faith which lacks works. So let's go on in the interest of time. James, as he's talking about the faith and the connection of faith and works, and he's telling us and outlining, as we already discussed briefly, that faith must have works and that without works, the faith does not profit anybody. Faith is basically no good. That's what he's saying. It's almost like he's anticipating the objections that we in our day and age and that Christians back then might have. So let's look at a couple of objections. This is the third item that I think flows out of this text that are brought up in verse 18. What are some of the objections that James is anticipating? He's anticipating that his readers, look at verse 18, might say that, some might say that you have faith and I have works. Show me your faith without your works and I will show you my faith by my works, says James. So he's anticipating their objections. He's anticipating that people might say, well, you have faith and I have works, so you do your own thing, I'll do my own thing, and let's just see what happens. Let's just sort of leave me alone. But that's not the case. Look at how James addresses those objections to James's thesis and statement that faith without works is dead. Look at what he says. He says, you believe. So in other words, if you think that you believe that there is one God, in verse 19 he says, you do well. So think about now, current day and age. How many people are there that you know right now and that are probably here right now that say, yes, I believe there's God. There's one God. And I believe, perhaps I gotten that belief from my parents or grandparents, and maybe I even visit the church once or twice a year. I believe. And that's one of the objections. And James says, if that's you in that category, that is a good thing. Verse 19 in the middle, it says, you do well. If you believe that there is one God, you do well. But look at the following statements. The following statement says, even the demons believe and tremble. So if you believe that there is God, that is great. That's the first step. But he's bringing to their attention. Then he says that just that by itself, belief, cerebral belief of existence of the living God, is not enough. Why? Because as you can see, the demons believe. They also tremble. Just having the knowledge and acknowledgement that there is God is not an equation of the saving faith. If you need an example, think of this. If you perhaps have been hibernating during the winter and are going to the beach during the summer with your pale alabaster type of skin, you might believe that sunscreen will help you, will prevent you from the burn. But unless there is an action that is associated with that faith and you put on sunscreen, And you actually will go to the beach and will be burnt unless you actually put that sunscreen. So granted, that's a very simplistic type of an example. That's what James is bringing to our attention. A simple belief and knowledge in something is not equating to faith. It's not equating to faith. Conversely, to address the objection of those that say, I have works. So some people might not necessarily have faith, but say, I have a lot of works. Think back to the previous chapter. At the end of chapter 1, recall that James was saying that all good works, where do they originate from? They come from above, from God. So he's putting objections, he's crushing to the objections, and he's saying, no, simply the belief without deeds is not equating and is not pleasing to God and is not what a Christian life ought to be. And simply focusing on works by themselves is also insufficient in its way. Or in other words, the works, if they are present in someone's life, are originating from God. So that's the third item I wanted to highlight. And real briefly, two more. In verses 21 through 25, James then goes on and highlights two examples of what living faith ought to look like in the lives of the Christians. We're not going to read those examples in detail, but look at them. Verses 21 through 25, what they talk about is an example of Abraham, number one, and also an example of Rahab. Both people, drastically different lifestyles. One was the father of faith of all Christians, of all fathers of faith, you could say, Abraham, and the other one was Rahab, who we know was a harlot in Jericho. And what's the point? In both of those examples, if you look at them and if you study them, the point that James is trying to make is that in both examples, though they're from completely different lifestyles, though one person is the father of faith and the other person was a woman, a Gentile, who got converted essentially at the very last minute, he's demonstrating that in both of those lives, there was works, there were actions accompanying the faith of those two individuals. Those individuals weren't just simply professing by their words. There was actually actions that were observable. So that's the fourth item that I wanted to highlight from this passage. And lastly, the main takeaway on which James ends this section is verse 26. That is really the thrust of this passage. Something that James has highlighted in prior verses and talked about it. But what is James telling us here? What is the main takeaway? Look at verse 26 again. He's telling us, for as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. Essentially the same thing he said in verse 17. He says, thus also faith by itself as does not have works is dead. And he repeats it a number of times. So the main takeaway here that James is telling us, Christians 2,000 years ago, as well as Christians right then and there in the church, is that as we test our faith, as we test our walk with Christ, there ought to be actions. There ought to be work. As I said, remember that passage that says, you were created for good works. And so reflect and look at yourself, and let's look at our lives to observe, are there actions? Are there fruit of the Holy Spirit? Why? Because here, James is so clearly telling us that as the body without the spirit is dead, so faith without works is dead also. Implying that a simple profession of faith without any works, without any actions to support that, is really dead faith or no faith at all in our lives. It might be tradition, might be something else, but it's not faith at all. So with that, we'll wrap it up today. And next Sunday, we will go back to verse 24 and really dig into what is it that James talks about when he focuses and says that works are also necessary. Amen.